This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, and congratulations to England, who during the current international break limped into next year's World Cup finals with an aggregate score over their two games of 15-0. EFL graduate Harry Kane with seven of them. Congratulations too to Scotland and Wales, who both made it into the playoffs, and to Northern Ireland, who forced European champions Italy into a similar fate. It's back to the day job this coming weekend for many of the players involved, and we'll get the ball rolling by chatting to a couple of managers, one of whom is more than familiar with international football, on the official EFL podcast. So, in recent weeks here on the official EFL podcast, from the top of the Sky Bet Championship, we've heard from Scott Parker at Bournemouth, Mark Robbins at Coventry City, and Charlie Austin at QPR. Time, I think, to check in with the Stoke City manager, Michael O'Neill, who's just recorded two very useful consecutive away wins and has just celebrated 2 years in the job. And actually, I was just reflecting on the home nation's successes in certain quarters in the World Cup, etc., etc., Michael. Has your body clock got used to the kind of reversal of workflows yet? Because normally you'd be busy international period, and then maybe you can go phew when the domestic season starts again. But of course, it's full reverse now for you for the last couple of years.
Yeah, it is. I have to say, I look forward to the international breaks when they come around. I think as a club manager, you need them really, because the schedule's crazy for the first, you know, I think we've had a midweek game every week outside the international breaks. So you've a lot of preparation, a lot of reviewing games, trying to prepare for the next game, and just the emotions of it, the up and down emotions every 2 or 3 days of playing a game and trying to control that, I think is probably, that's the biggest challenge I've found in the job, obviously, from going and playing where you played 8 to 10 games a year to, you know, you're playing, you can play 8 to 10 games a month, really. And I've adapted to it now, and I look forward to the international breaks, and it's nice to watch the international games as well.
That's really interesting that you enjoy those international breaks, because we had Mark Robbins with us and he said he and his wife enjoy visiting royal residences just to take a little bit of time away and get that subjectivity. Do you need the same?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, you know, the first week is pretty much a down week. We obviously have the players in and we tailor that. We would sort of do a maximum of 3 days and or 2 days, just depending. We sort of give them after the Saturday, they typically get a Sunday, Monday off, and then they come in Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then they're off, you know, for a sort of 3-4 day break. And then you come into where we are now, like a full week's training, which is a bit of a luxury, because we haven't had that. You know, the three times we've had that this season have been obviously off the, you know, as the second week of an international break, but equally you don't have your full squad for that week either. So I think, you know, that first week you switch off, the second week you're pretty much working as normal. But certainly last week, obviously, I had a few days away. And, you know, for me, it's not royal residences. I just sort of go back to Edinburgh where my family are, and it's nice to get a few days away.
Well, in fairness, Robbo would pass that off as a day out going to sort of up to Edinburgh. Yeah. And then, whereas you just, well, you take it in your stride. Exactly. So listen, you were bottom when you took over. Where do you, aside from the obvious positions in the league table, where do you think the club is now in comparison? And I guess really importantly, because this is an era when managers don't get very long, 2 years on, how do you think you kind of got to where you are now?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was only last week, I think someone pointed at me, I think 2 years is, I'm not sure, but I think that possibly makes me the third longest manager in the Championship, Tony Mowbray.
No.
I think, and Mark Robbins are the two that actually, ironically, have been in post longer than I have. So it shows you the nature of the league that we operate in. And the demands of the people that own football clubs as well. I think the first thing, obviously, when I came at the club was survival. You know, for the club to be in the position it was in, you know, bottom of the table, I think we were maybe 6 or 8 points from safety at that point. But equally with a very, a squad that cost a lot of money to put together and a pretty disillusioned group of players that had been, I suppose, put together, you know, in quite a short space of time by, you know, three different managers, you know, Paul Lambert for 6 months in the Premier League, and then obviously Gary Rowett and Nathan Jones coming in. And then I suppose really survival was a priority, and then to sort that out. And, you know, the key to sorting it out is to keep the players that want to play at the club, to keep the ones that you believe are the right types and are of the right level, and to get rid of the ones that you don't, to be honest. And that was a process that we've gone through. It takes minimum 4 transfer windows to get anywhere close to being able to do that. And, you know, I think what we have is a much more streamlined squad, younger squad, but more importantly, a hungrier squad with players that, you know, I think they're at a stage of their career where they're trying to really get to, you know, the Premier League, or trying to establish themselves as top championship players. And there's a real appetite within the group as well. And I think that's, you know, the biggest changes that needed to be made to, you know, the what we found, obviously, when we came into the building.
I wonder if you've been able to benefit from a kind of, from the reality check having come just before you as well, in so much as, probably the first couple of seasons down, it was, we're Stoke, you know, we'll bounce straight back. You know, everybody talks about parachute payments, et cetera, et cetera. But having had that reality check, tasted life near the bottom of the table, do you think it has afforded you that bit longer to set a new culture at the club, to get them moving longer term in the right direction again?
Yeah, I think it has. But I think that the only thing that you can do, your culture and how you build it in a club takes time. It ultimately is affected directly by results. I don't believe that, you know, you ever have a fantastic culture if your results aren't going well, and people are always, you know, looking at other reasons or looking for a way out. You know, I was surprised when I came to the club, the number of players who wanted out of the club and felt that they had a privilege to get away from the club, and the situation the club was in was really something that, you know, they didn't have blood in their hands, so to speak. And, you know, I was a bit surprised at that. And obviously that gave me quite a stark insight into what was needed in this situation. But I think the owners were realistic. I think they knew that there needed to be a major turnover. If you look at, obviously, we've, you know, our net spend is minus. We got a good fee for Nathan Collins, and we've invested only in players sort of 23 and under. We've brought players through that were on the edges of things here and really weren't making much of an impact. Even people like Tyrese Campbell, Harry Souter, Josh Tymon, for example, Joe Bursick. And all of that takes a little bit of time. We're having to do the, you know, the promotion push or build a promotion team in a different way than what we tried to do when we came down. You know, we spent 50 million in the first window when we came down. We subsequently ended up, we spent another 20 million, I think, in subsequent windows. So, you know, as I say, we're not spending anywhere near that in the current situation. The rules don't allow us to do it. And we have a wage bill, which I think is much more manageable and much more realistic to where a championship club should be. We certainly, our ambitions aren't any different. We still harbour ambitions to be back in the Premier League, and we've got a very stable ownership. But I think there is a realistic approach to it now, having obviously gone through a lot of pain in the last 2 to 3 years.
As somebody that's worked hard to get where you are through all the different opportunities and, you know, start of your management career, breaking all the rest of it, did some of those players who clearly didn't want to be there, you don't have to name names, but did they test you, your patience, your approach? Were there times when you were flabbergasted thinking, my goodness me, where's the lack of gratitude? Where's the humility?
Yeah, look, I knew that I was going to have to deal with that situation getting in, and they didn't have any need to have a gratitude to myself. But, you know, I did, like, they had come to English football or they'd come to Stoke from within English football. For many of them, they were on the best contracts of their careers, and really they were given very, very little back. And that was what flabbergasted me more than anything else. And obviously the players here, they're in a really good position. We've got great training facilities here. We've got a lovely stadium. We've got a big, you know, very, very strong fan base. That, so in many ways, you know, what do you want from a club? If you decided to come here and sign a long-term contract, you know, you should commit to that and try to get the best you can given that you've made that commitment. And obviously, we invested in players heavily as well. We weren't paying small fees at that minute in time. But I didn't have any real loyalty to those players either. They weren't my players. I hadn't signed them. So given the approach that they took, you know, my priority was to try and move them on, to be honest. And I tried to do that as quickly as possible. You know, and pretty much every window, you know, more players have left than have joined. And that's been the cycle. Probably in the latter stages of that cycle now, really, in that, you know, this feels like the first time we've started to build properly in terms of the types of players we signed. You know, the first couple of ones we had to go maybe a little different, you know, older players, free agents, but really good characters, still very good players. But maybe, you know, we had too many of them. And now we've got a nicer balance in the squad because, you know, it is difficult to compete over 46 games, particularly with the teams that come down who have, if they manage to keep their squads together as well. You know, we see Bournemouth and Fulham at the minute, obviously at the top of the table, and, you know, they're two very, very strong teams, two very strong squads as well. But I think that, you know, the club recognise that we're going to have to build a team here in a slightly different fashion from, as I say, what we tried to do previously.
We've used the words characters, we've used the words culture. What's a Michael O'Neill culture feel like on a day-to-day basis?
Listen, it's quite straightforward for me. You know, I think that as a player, you have to, you know, all I ask of the players is they come in, they apply themselves to training, they're good to work with, they're receptive, they deal with disappointment. You know, the only disappointment I always say to them is that they'll be left out of the team. And they don't really need to show me that. They need to come in the next day and train in a way that makes me bring them back into my thoughts. And that's all I ask them, you know what I mean? I continually say it, you know, better people make better players, and that's the only, you know, real, I suppose, responsibility that we put on them, that when they come in here in the building, they apply themselves to the best that they can because it's for their benefit as well. You know, I had periods myself as a player where when I was out of the team and I knew myself, I can be moody and I could be difficult. And when I look back on that, I think that the only one that ever suffered in that situation was me. So I always sort of say to the players, you know, make sure that when they come in here, they maximise what they get out of their day. They may be left out of the team on a Friday, but, you know, the week starts again on a Sunday or a Monday and they can get themselves going again. So they've only got to deal with that disappointment for one day.
Yeah. Can you still do Mardy if you need to? Have you got that in your locker if you need to pull a mood occasionally on them?
Oh, yeah. I've no problem voicing my frustrations at times. They actually had a bit of that this morning, to be fair. I've no problem with that. I think, look, for me, you have to be, if the standards are where you want them to be, I think it's important that you say that to the players and you always demand a little bit more. But if the standards aren't there, then I think it's really important that you address it. And it's not just the coaching staff and the management, that, you know, a big onus is that on the players as well. You know, the players have to drag it out of each other as well. And, you know, that's the type of sort of environment and culture that we've tried to build here. And, you know, it's quite heartening here. You know, I can be sitting here at 3:30 in an afternoon and the car park's still full of cars. You know, the players here do a lot of work. They do a lot of work, you know, behind the scenes. They do a lot of analysis work. They're in the gym a lot. So we have that all the time, and we're just trying to, you know, raise the bar all the time. It's pretty much how we feel we can, you know, obviously achieve what we want to achieve.
Yeah. Do you use the P word? Do you say to them, look, guys, the minimum we expect this season's the playoffs? Or are you one of the ones, do you know, do you pile it onto them or do you take it off them, the kind of pressure on that front?
No, I don't really set those type of expectations on them. I sort of reflect where we are in the league and where we are against the other teams. We do look statistically at a lot of, you know, where we were. You know, we look back at previous seasons, for example, and how we have to, you know, correct that, because there's no getting away from it. The club has struggled a little bit to adapt to the Championship, and hence why we're here for the fourth year. But I think that they have their own ambitions to obviously try and finish in a top six position. We know that without having to talk about it. But when I look at the games and how we've played this season to date, you know, there's a lot of encouraging signs. We have to make sure that we can maintain that over the 46 game season. We're dealing at this minute in time, actually, you know, we've 6 injured players at the minute, all who could play in our team. And we wouldn't have been able to cope with that, I don't think, in the previous, certainly the previous 2 years. But it's been a very, this feels to me like the first real season, because the first season was pretty much, I was the manager for 4 months and then we had COVID. So then the season finished behind, obviously, empty stadiums and behind closed doors. And then we played a full season with no crowds. And now we've got, you know, it's almost like the Stoke people are seeing this team for the first time. And it last year did afford us, you know, the likes of, you know, Suter, Tymon, Collins, Bursic, those players, Campbell in the before, prior to injury. It gave them the ability to bed into the team a little bit without maybe playing without the pressure of the expectation of the fans as well. So I think that, you know, in a roundabout way, that's helped us a little bit. But this season, you know, there's definitely an edge to it, and the team and the players that we've brought in have improved the group as well.
Michael, it's always a joy to talk to you. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Clem.
The big news in the Sky Bet Championship this week is, I'm afraid, off the field for supporters of Derby County. It's not even December and it already looks almost certain that the club will be starting next season in Sky Bet League One after they were deducted a further 9 points after admitting to breaches of the league's profitability and sustainability rules. An agreed decision was reached between the league and the club and was formally ratified by an independent disciplinary chair as per the requirements of EFL regulations. The new 9-point penalty becomes effective immediately, and it follows, of course, the earlier 12-point deduction imposed upon the club in September for entering administration, meaning the club have now been deducted a total of 21 points so far this season. They have also been given a further suspended 3-point deduction, which is going to take effect if they fail to comply with the terms of a budget for the remainder of the season set out as part of an agreed decision between the EFL and the club.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clint.
From the battle to escape from the EFL to the battle to stay in it and League Two's bottom clubs, Scunthorpe United have recently appointed the former Rochdale Twice, Barnsley, Bolton Wanderers and Tranmere Rovers manager Keith Hill as the man to save them. He inherited a team that had taken 11 points from their first 15 games and they picked up one more in his first game in charge. And as I look at you and talk to you in all your magnificence, Hilly, I can't help but think about what an incredible 2021 you have had, mate.
Oh, tell me about it. You know, I still haven't taken it all in, if I'm being honest with you, but, you know, I'm very happy to be back in doing what I love doing. I love being on the training pitch. I love trying to make an impact on players or a team's opportunity to be successful. What I don't like about football is the politics. And I've certainly had a lot of politics over the last 12, 18, 2 years, if you like.
Yeah. I mean, and also you're very authentic. So have you had to master the art of occasionally, because I don't think it's possible for you to do it all the time, occasionally biting your tongue or counting to five before the words leave your mouth?
No, I can't do it. It's not the way I've been brought up. And it does go against me. There's no question about that, that I found to my detriment. I've been brought up by a good family. Honesty, you know, a little bit of integrity, good values. And I say it how I see it, you know, and I can't. I've tried my best to, but what happens is if I dilute what I want to say, you know, people start interpreting. And I don't like that. So I just say how I see it. You know, I'm pretty honest with a group of players and I'm pretty honest in interviews. That's why I don't really like doing them.
Well, you have to do them because, I mean, I've always loved them. I have some very fond memories of times we've spent together around big FA Cup games, or I will never forget the day when Rochdale were first promoted and your former assistant Flicker doing the, what was it on the floor?
The worm.
The worm on the floor, and oh, what a changing room that was with Tom Heaton there on loan, and just so it was just such a great time. Is it more important for you then to be your authentic self and you're maybe not happy to lose opportunities, but it's much more important for you to be Keith Hill than anything else?
I think it's important for my family. You know, the way I was brought up by my dad, my mother, I'm genuine. And, you know, but I'm afraid that, you know, that at times, you know, creates the wrong impression of who I am. You know, I know who I am. My family know who I am. And I don't think it's translated well sometimes with, you know, some of the interviews, or there's a perception of who Keith Hill is. And I don't think it's fair. And what you get now within football is, and in the general walk of life is, you get these sources. Now, I don't know who these sources are. you know, I've got an idea of who sources are at football clubs. But we hear it all the time on all these news feeds that a source close to the club, a source close to a certain person believes, and then they create this perception that isn't reality. And it's that side of the game that really, really does get me angry.
Yeah. So when you go into an interview, and obviously you were connected at least with at least one other vacancy before you took the Scunthorpe job, are you also your authentic self? Do you actually have the chat with the chairman and say, you're not taking an easy option here? If I don't agree with you, I will question you. And you get it all on the table.
Yes. But they want to know what you can do. And if you look at my CV, it stacks up to anybody's, you know. But then there is a certain, like I previously said, perception of who I am. And that doesn't go down well with all the people at the football club. And I must say that Mark Palios, I believe he made a brave decision to hire me, you know. But once he hired me, you know, I should have been given the opportunity to take the club into the playoffs, because it's something that we'd achieved together. And that was really disappointing to get the sack. You know, once we'd previously been to Wembley that season in the Papa John's Trophy final, and had achieved, which was, you know, our first objective was to get into the playoffs. So I was bitterly disappointed with that decision, but I've got over it now.
Yeah. I mean, hurt presumably as well.
Well, I was hurt because we'd been successful. I think out of 40 games, won 20, drawn 10, lost 10 in all competitions. And in the league, out of 33, you know, won 15, drawn 10, lost 8. And that record in itself, even over 46 games, would have at least got us into the playoffs. And that was the number one aim to achieve, you know, when I got to the football club. You know, and I thank Mark, I thank the players and all the staff, you know, because we did achieve what we was designed to try and achieve, which was getting to the playoffs. But to get that opportunity to represent Tranmere in the playoffs and to try and get promoted, for it to be ripped away in the manner that it was very difficult, and it was hurtful. But there'll be people who said it was my own fault.
When you are assessing your next move, are you quite strategic? Do you look at things like where you've got the best possible chance of, well, certainly the objective of the owners, but also looking at resources and things? Or are you quite sort of touchy-feely about that and you just kind of feel your way through?
When opportunities come up, then I'm interested because I love football. Previously said, you know, I do love working with players. I love working with a group of players to try and improve them, to try and improve opportunities. But when you sat at that table during the interview process, there's got to be reality in what can be achieved. And it's quite simple here. You know, we have to make sure that we survive. We've got 30 games now to try and achieve that. That's our sole objective at this moment in time, so that we can grow again as a football club. There's no hidden agendas. I've got to deal with the fact that we're under, I think, is it a soft embargo, a COVID embargo. So I'm working with a group of players, trying to improve them individually to give our players and team the best opportunity to get as many 3 points as we can so we can survive. So it's not a simple task, but it's a task that's clear, you know, for everybody to see what we have to do. And as much as we can work on the training pitch, the real important issue this season is then 30 games. So we've got to do a lot of quick learning. I've got to learn about the group. The group's got to learn about me. There's a big demand to the way that I want to play the game, in and out of possession. And the players have responded superbly well within my first week to what I want. And we got a really, really good, you know, valuable point against Salford at the weekend.
So listen, I mean, your predecessor went after two wins in 25. Obviously, there was one game with caretaker management team in place. When you stand before a group of new players for the first time, particularly when I would assume they're a bit down in the dumps, down in the doldrums and things, how's that first encounter look? Is it a room? Is it out on the training field? Is it one by one? Paint us a little picture, if you would, Keith.
Well, first and foremost, they were already in a position where they're planning for the FA Cup. So I came in on the Friday and it was Tony McMahon who was in charge. And I just had an overview. We got through to Monday. Then I did a presentation on the way that I want to play, the expectations from the group, the way that I want to train, my footballing philosophy. This is the way that we're going to win, you know, in League Two, and we can all achieve this together. And after that, we go on the training pitch and we have to put it into practice. And once we start practicing correctly, and again, it's something that I use all the time, we don't practice failure. I don't expect the players to practice failure on the training pitch. I expect them to practice success. I want them to enjoy working hard. In society, there's a feeling, I get a feeling that people want to do less but expect more. Now, on the training pitch, I want us to do more, a lot more, you know, in preparation for our opponents. And if we do more and we become the fittest team in the league, then I expect us to be successful. But I think it was very important that I set out to the players exactly what I expect from them. So on the Monday, presentation, expectations, this is how we're going to do it. And I expect everybody to be on the same page.
Keith, how accurate is your radar? Because you'll probably have preconceptions of players. They've either been with you in the past, you've played against them, you'll have done some research. But when you get out there on the training field, are there some that frankly disappoint you and others that brilliantly surprise you?
I think that'll just evolve. It does evolve. And again, I can't make a preconceived judgment on a player from watching on, you know, a video or on, you know, iPlayer, et cetera, et cetera. And it's like anything, personality. I want personality in the players. I want to be able to connect with a personality, connect with a group, so that we can build relationships. And I think it's important that players build relationships, unit relationships, team relationships. But I want a genuine relationship where I can be honest with a player and the players and the player don't get offended. Because everybody's got to understand this is reality. The reality that the players in, and I've made the players aware of the reality of the situation that we find ourselves in. And there can't be a malaise to it. We've got to make sure we grasp that we can control the next 30 games. So we can try and control what we do. So we're in a position where we can control our opponents. And I believe that we've got enough. And there is some pleasant surprises already as you walk through the door. But I can't judge players on one game, one training session. I think, you know, 6 to 8 to 12 weeks, and there'll still be surprises. But I've got to allow the group to grow under the guidance and the work that I expect them to do. And I've got to give them opportunities to come along on the journey. It will be a journey.
You obviously enhance the positive and you know, your own energy and passion, etc. Do you at all do a reality check in there as well and point out what the downside would be if Scunthorpe United were relegated? Not just the implications for the club, Keith, but obviously some of them would drift off and that would be probably the end of their football careers. It's a real no man's land if you get in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Well, I previously said to you, you know, I am honest. And the honest assessment is, you know, and you asked whether you do your research, you do. I think in the 31 previous games, 3 league wins, you know, that's in the league. So that, it can't be an elephant in the room. It's got to be dealt with. The players have got to understand that they're part responsible for the position that the club's in. You know, their performance levels, they've got to understand, have to improve if we want to improve our opportunities to stay up. So, yes, I've been brutally honest with the group and, you know, they've accepted and now we move on. Now we take part in the plan over my 31 games to make sure that we improve our opportunities with the way that we train, the way that we play against, you know, select opponents to get the points that we need to at least stay up, then we can grow again.
If you survive at the end of the season, How, if you put it down to percentages, what percentage would be down to your ability to set a team up tactically and to get the right technical information into them? And how much will come down to your man management skills?
That's a very, very good question. I probably can't answer it because it isn't really about me. I need the players to believe in the way that I do things. I've proven to the players that my methods do work in League Two. My methods do work with a group of players individually as well. I've worked with some great players who've gone on to make Premier League, you know, careers. We've had promotions from League Two. We've had multiple top 10 finishes in League One with the lowest budget in League One. There's a lot of people who've benefited from the successes of bringing a football club's community together, you know, an underdog's mentality. But ultimately, the players have to buy into it. If they don't buy into it, they won't be that successful. If they go out there and do their own thing, we won't have that success. There's got to be a framework. Within that framework, there's got to be freedom. They've got to be able to express themselves. I want personalities. And if we get all that, we will be successful. And I pointed out to the players, you know, two promotions with Rochdale, you know, three playoff places, two with Rochdale, one with Tranmere, and a Papa John's trophy. That's only in five seasons as me as being a manager in League Two, you know, and I believe that there is the foundation in place here with the group of players to go on and be successful.
Keith, final question. Have you got your hands on the pre-match tannoy yet at the ground? Have you got your hands on the music yet? Are you getting a few of your own tunes spun in there to get the crowd going before they walk out?
No, not yet. I don't think too many people have done their homework on my history or the person who I am. You know, I love my music, but I'm too busy at this moment in time concentrating on football matters alone. And again, I'm trying to go under the radar because you know my personality. It doesn't sit well with all the people. You know what I mean? So, like I said, I'm not foolish with respect to, you know, trying to control everything. But, you know, sometimes it'd be nice to just sit under the radar.
Yeah, well, there's no chance chatting to me about that. We should explain for anybody that missed it. Keith used to like to spin, well, quite a lot of sort of Manchester classics, didn't you? Certainly in your time at Rochdale, you used to like play a bit of Stone Roses and stuff like that.
Yes.
A bit of In Spiral Carpets.
Yes. Yeah, I love the Stone Roses. You know, Ian Brown, wow. I think, what an artist. You know, I think he's amazing. And again, like, it's something that, you know, I still listen to. But I don't have the power, you know, to decide what tunes are being played at this moment in time at Scunthorpe.
Yeah, but if you get on a little run, stick a little 3-4 game winning run together, then your credentials start to rise. Then you'll be able to dip your head around the PA box, stick your head in there. There's probably a bloke's been in there for 40 years and go, I tell you what, stick that on today, will you? Eh?
It'd be nice to. It would be nice, but it's not my priority at this moment in time. I just listen to Ian in the car.
That's fine, mate. Great to talk to you, Hilly. We wish you good luck.
Take care.
The tour de force that is Keith Hill. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, Exeter City's club record unbeaten run, currently the longest in English football, is now 18 matches in all competitions. Having gone 14 games without a win, Mansfield have now made it 4 in a row. And just over a month after he joined us for that brilliant manager special on the official EFL podcast, Stevenage have parted company with Alex Revelle, with the club just 2 points above the drop zone. Meanwhile, in Sky Bet League One, like Exeter City, also based in the southwest, Plymouth Argyle's unbeaten league run is now 16 matches. Charlton Athletic's turnaround under Johnny Jackson continues with a fourth win in 6 matches. And Max Waters made it 5 goals in 4 games in all competitions for MK Dons, with 2 in their win over Cambridge United. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Keith Hill and Michael O'Neill. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name is Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
the official EFL podcast.